this is Rachel McAlpine, and in late 2019, I recorded this interview with the brilliant, hyper-energetic, overachieving Scottish poet, Michael Peterson. Sorry about all the superlatives, but if you don't believe me, go Google him. I've been saving this interview until now when other poets have finally invaded this podcast, so it's not just me, me, me. Yay! Michael is kind of responsible for that, actually. And so he starts this interview by reading an extraordinary poem called Gravity.
Gravity. I love you, she said, as if wearing someone else's skin, as if clocking in, then out of the 9 to 5 that tired our bones. I love you, she said, with the forced verve of waves gargling oily pebbles on a spill, its fringe a congealing shoreline, talk laced in salt, a tongue socked in sand. I love you, she said, with the mechanical bareness of a warden clamping a car to the pavement, the payment meter and itself, digesting diesel that once made this engine purr, a majestic gull sifting through a city's birthing gunk, love, come tragic overspill, I love, she said, I love you, with the frankness of caffeinated truths in the morning, after our own golden Armageddon, which is as welcome here as Nirvana, I love you, half price, with a candour of when we never really knew each other, bridal curiosity ringing, rings setting up the eyes, I love you, in a way we never touched upon in joviality, in a way we never rediscovered that raw sexuality, in a way we have time to tread water. But that's no good thing. I love you, with a saccharine warmth for our own self-pleasantries, with everything we're floating, we promised to make things float, were we not supposed to? This one's made us float.
Thank you, Michael. You know, I've never asked you how old you are.
Oh, straight into it, yeah. See, well, this is the weird thing. What old do you think I am?
In your 30s?
I'm in my 30s, yeah.
Yeah. 35?
I have just recently turned 35, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty good guess.
That's a very accurate guess. And it sort of puts a stumbling block on my point I was going to make about age, which is the vast majority of time, people think I'm a bit younger than I am. When I read, when I perform, if they've read my books, I guess I've done quite a lot of different things in quite a short period of time. And I get a lot of young writers, a lot of people saying, oh, well, how have you managed to do this? I mean, we're about the same age, and I can tell they may be like 24, 25, and I'm aware of the fact that I'm significantly not the same age as them. I say, well, actually, I'm a bit older than you. You're like, what, are you like 27, 28? And I'm like, no, I'm a little bit older than that as well. And then there's often a look of disappointment. It's like the prodigiously talented writer I thought you were. In fact, you're just 10 years older than me, and now I fully expect to be at that level when I get to that age. Or there's a sort of wincing back as if they've sort of majorly offended or taken your achievement down a peg or two on the fact of relating it to an accurate age.
Yeah, so it's not just luck then. Yeah, well, I probably had a bit of an advantage because we've talked quite a bit, and so, you couldn't possibly have done so many gigs and events in so many parts of the world if you were only 25. So I think that was the intuition kicking in. Yeah. But you do have the energy. I mean, when I can remember thinking, maybe I was about 40, that after you're 24, as far as friendships are concerned, age is seems to be completely irrelevant. But that was a 40-year-old talking. I don't know whether I'd say the same now.
Yeah. I mean, I have a benefit from having friends at all different ages, from, you know, poets who are older than my grandparents to young writers and musicians that I've came across who are, you know, just jumping out of their teens. And I certainly think when you get past your early 20s, having friendships on these multi-generational levels just becomes completely the norm if you've got this wide variety of interests. I run a company with someone who's, you know, 20 years older than me. Some of my best friends are in their sort of mid to late 60s. Lots of writers I'm working with and musicians at those levels. And then there's people all across the spectrum, the age spectrum. And you just swirl together. Once you leave school or university, I think, institutions where you're generally clamped together with people your own age, and then there's a mature student that sort of makes a self-deprecating remark about their age all the time because they're in this pool of people who are all slightly more similarly aged. All of that just disintegrates into life and stories and interests and whatever narratives you're developing together with these people. People become human beings rather than, you know, institutional structures.
I'm kind of not surprised to hear you say that, because you never once expressed the slightest surprise that I'm nearly 80. It's just normal in your world where you have got, well, you've got a family that goes through five generations, you said, and then you've got all these other friends at every age, and it's setting all of you up, all of us up, so to speak, for a good life, because we don't sort of feel clamped into, oh, I'm a millennial, I'm a baby boomer, I'm the lucky generation, did you know that? Or I'm just so old that it didn't have a name for it. It is irrelevant, and it's enriching too, because just purely because you have got the mix, and it's not just a whole lot of university students together with a couple of mature students, as you say, apologizing for their great old age. Mature, usually meaning about 35.
Yeah, I think especially with writers, I mean, you have, there's this, it's not like with the music industry, there's not as many hype writers as there is hype bands. So when you're dealing with writers and you know they've achieved a lot or written quite a few books, you expect them to have lived quite a lot of life. And I'm not saying that can't be done as a fast burning flame, you know, young, quickly, with great illuminations. But generally, people have lived life a little bit more and talked about it. And being part of literature showcases all over the world, it's one of the most generationally diverse professions in the world, I think.
Oh, yay for writers. That's a really... I'll brood on that. In your poem, I found that very interesting, because, and I wanted to know, in this fictional or real relationship that you're describing, the marriage... how long is it between the urgent sexual explosion and the "I love you," she said, you know, when it all sort of fizzles out and you don't know if it's real or not?
Yeah. Well, that was written in stages, that poem. I first wrote it when I was living with a girlfriend at the time, and we had a bit of a squabble, and she had went to bed. But, I mean, we still exchanged some sort of pleasantries. We were going our separate. I was staying up sort of charged with something. I think we'd actually been at a poetry event. And just the way that, even though if you disagreed about something, or just the way people could sort of mechanically churn out this sort of "I love you" fashion, and it resembling a sort of ebb of passion and, you know, the visceral nature of it all that people glamorise in this honeymoon period, chimed alongside a line I'd heard in one of the poems that night, which stuck with me, by a Scottish Glaswegian poet called Colin Maguire. And it said, "She kissed him goodbye as if franking a letter." And that just sat in my chest all night. And then I thought, I want to write something sort of responsive to this. That relationship I was in, I'm now sort of really good friends with the individual, but we were no longer together. The relationship was sort of fizzling out. So it was part of my own experience, but really more so it was built on where that line, "kissed him as if franking a letter," took me in terms of all of the relationships I've witnessed. And I guess it was written as a warning to myself, you know, not to be in the situation where 10 years from now you're in these relationships that is really making nobody happy and is maybe a economical thing while you're staying together, or a convenience thing, or just, you know, reluctance, or sometimes even a laziness, an indolence to move on in those situations. And I guess it's a torch lit for passion, even though it comes across as the opposite.
I'm very struck by that. Were we not supposed to?
Mm.
This once made us float, because even though that's what you're affirming and saying, mustn't forget that. It's also this awful, what are you supposed to do in a marriage or a relationship? And it just struck me that, you know, when you're young, relationships and sex and everything are very confusing. The whole shebang all boiled, the whole boil up. And when you're old, it might still be exactly like that. Nothing might change. But the sexual component of poetry and life kind of puts a different cast on it. So we might be floating, but it might not be floating in euphoria. It might be floating in this is a good life. Yeah, I like this. Something much milder, and probably that younger people or your younger self would really scorn. I don't know. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you know nothing really about your own sexual appetites or the appetites of other people when you're really young and rushing into it. And it's one of those things that you want to immediately be the master of, you know, but it's going to be a slow journey. You learn how to touch properly. You learn to converse with people, going through sexual experiences, rather than, you know, staying silent and trying to replicate these different things. So you learn to float in different ways, which isn't this hard, fast, glamorized sexual experience that you're so lusting after if you were a horny young teenager like myself and millions across the world. And yeah, you do learn to float in a different way. And I think, yeah, that comes with contentment, that comes with appreciation of individuals and these various sexual awakenings that you'll probably have with each new partner you come across or with each new year or experience you have with the partner you're currently with. And you combine all of them together and make your own sort of rich, ripe potpourri of experience by the end.
I guess when you're really young, you think there is a right way. There is something you're supposed to be and do and be like, and you're kind of hankering after that. I wonder at what stage you leave that behind and realize it's far more complicated and a lot more fun to find your own way. I was wondering if you can imagine yourself being 79, now that since you have got so many role models of different ages, is that neurologically possible?
Well, you've got the aging apps, which are all the rage now, taking a picture of yourself 40 years into the future.
Oh, right. That's what you look like to other people. What about inside?
I can imagine the things I want to achieve by that point in time, you know. I can imagine the things I want to write, the countries I want to visit, the people I want to have around me. I can imagine building in decades, the same way I have done significantly over the last one. I'm much more comfortable at 35 than I was at 25 and what I want and what I've achieved and what I have to say, and I fully expect that sort of evolution every 10 years at that point in time. I'm also excited about what my friends are going to be like at that age. So I guess that makes you excited about what you're going to be like. There's friends that I'm sure are still going to be annoying me on all sorts of levels, and I'll be doing the same to them in a wily and playful manner. So I guess cerebrally, I expect to be, you know, wiser, stronger, just as, you know, risky and flirtatious, hopefully. I know a few poets that I've read with, and I've been guilty of doing the same. Sometimes when you walk into a room and say the audience is between 60 and 80, you think, oh, I better not do the rude ones. I better not do the filthy. I better not do that introduction. And it's like, of course, just because people get older doesn't mean they lose their sense of humor or get any less filthy or any of these situations. And I maybe made that mistake a couple of times as a younger writer. And then the very poem which I thought was going to be the one that fell flat was the one that made the reading. And then you just become aware of your own biases. So I learned a lesson young to root that out, and would like to think I would be in the exact same position. I would be more attuned to wittier metaphors and, you know, filthier similes, and I would have higher expectations because of the number of years I had on Earth. But apart from that, yeah, I mean, so I look towards it positively, and I know there's the physical repercussions that people get, but I mean, you're probably fitter than me by the looks of it, so.
I think that's pretty remarkable view of how you're going to develop, because it's not easy thinking ahead. So, and I bet you're right on absolutely every count, and I bet there's a few surprises too. Thank you very, very much, Michael Peterson. It's been lovely of you to come on my teeny weeny not yet born podcast. Thank you.
No worries at all. Happy to be part of your pilot. Travelled thousands of miles to New Zealand just for this.
Of course you did. Thank you. Let's hear that poem again. It's Gravity. It's one of my favourites from Michael's collection, Oyster.
Gravity. I love you, she said, as if wearing someone else's skin, as if clocking in, then out of the 9 to 5 that tired our bones. I love you, she said, with the forced verve of waves gargling oily pebbles on a spill, its fringe a congealing shoreline, talk laced in salt, a tongue socked in sand. I love you, she said, with the mechanical bareness of a warden clamping a car to the pavement, the payment meter and itself, digesting diesel that once made this engine purr, a majestic gull sifting through a city's birthing gunk. Love, come, tragic overspill. I love, she said, I love you, with the frankness of caffeinated truths in the morning after our own golden Armageddon, which is as welcome here as Nirvana. I love you, half price, with a candour of when we never really knew each other, bridal curiosity ringing, rings setting up the eyes. I love you, in a way we never touched upon in joviality, in a way we never rediscovered that raw sexuality, in a way we have time to tread water. But that's no good thing. I love you, with a saccharine warmth for our own self-pleasantries, with everything we're floating, we promise to make things float. Were we not supposed to? This one's made us float.
Thank you, Michael Peterson, the unstoppable. But we will stop. We have stopped, actually. I hope you've soaked up some of his buzz, his energy. I'm Rachel McAlpine, and I'm a New Zealand poet. I'm 81 now, so Michael must be 36 or 37. Bye for now. Oh, and please give us a star, pretty please.